Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind and or print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA and the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Welcome to episode 313 of Green and Growing in the Garden, the weekly gardening show for the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. I'm Hugh Ralston, your host and producer, and I look forward to sharing with you over the next 40 minutes updates to our local garden scenes and recent articles about gardens, plants, and designers, both here in California, across the country, and around the world. Gardens are in my DNA. I was raised in a family of gardeners, and my grandparents and mother handed down the love of flowers, of orchids, and of roses, among many other gifts. I have been an inveterate gardener for years, from that first six-pack of marigolds I bought at Home Depot in suburban Connecticut to laying out birthday rose gardens, planting fruit trees, and rescuing overgrown and underloved gardens, as well as building my own garden library with classic design texts, memoirs, and commentaries from gardeners and designers alike, and, well, just a few glossy coffee table indulgences. I have spent years getting to know California's Mediterranean garden landscapes, plants, and climate, even as I have fallen for English and continental garden design traditions, grown fond of the particularities and peculiarities of succulents, which perform so well in our climate, and learned to love and respect the quiet power of a Japanese garden. I have been active in local garden societies and visited botanical gardens across the country and around the world, believing not only in the benefits of gardening itself, but of being in the garden, and of being charmed by that special alchemy of plants, climate, soil, design, place, space, light, and shade. Gardens are a place where we can become more alive and more connected with the world we share with others. And as the good book reminds us, it all began in a garden. Welcome to this week's show. It is the 1st of October today, and we start with our monthly newsletter from Jeanette Marantos, staff writer of The Times, published in The Times on the 1st of October. Happy October, dear readers. I am in deep disbelief that we are somehow nearing the end of 2025, but orb weaver spiders, those great harbingers of fall, are already out in force in my Ventura yard, stringing gotcha webs across my porch and all my walkways. So I guess it must be so. I have so many activities to share with you in the plants calendar below. Note especially that October is the opening gate for many of SoCal's native plant nurseries. But first, I want to talk about Las Palitas Nursery, one of California's oldest and most respected native plant nurseries with a huge SoCal clientele, although it's based in a very rural part of the Central Coast. In 1974, about 4 years before Mike Evans and Jeff Bone set out to start Tree of Life Native Plant Nursery outside San Juan Capistrano, Bert and Celeste Wilson, two cash-strapped but seriously dedicated Cal Poly San Luis Obispo students, started growing native plants in their backyard for Bert's landscaping jobs. And in 1978, they purchased land in the remote oak-covered hills outside Santa Margarita to start their own native plant nursery. Celeste had a master's degree in biology and a deep love for plants and the outdoors. Bert was a chemistry major working on his master's degree and trying to make ends meet by doing landscaping jobs in San Luis Obispo. And together, they had a brand new responsibility, their baby daughter, Penny. Their second child, Ian, would come 4 years later. Bert never finished his thesis, according to his daughter, Penny Nyant, because he and Celeste were too busy raising their family, building greenhouses, and embracing an almost unheard-of idea in the late 1970s, landscaping with native plants. Something he really pushed was the idea of not changing your garden for the plants, but picking plants that actually live in your environment, Nyant said, while giving me a mid-September tour of the sprawling nursery, laced by towering oaks, more than 40 varieties of manzanita, and a to-do list of repairs, orders, and planting jobs that could bring the Energizer bunny to his knees. Nyant, a biologist who also earned her degree at Cal Poly SLO, and her husband, Zinn, a Caltrans engineer, live just over the hill from the nursery. She used to walk the trail between her house and the nursery regularly until she spotted a cougar. She helped at the nursery as a teen, a college student, and a young mother, especially as her mother's health declined, but abruptly took over daily operations of the nursery when Bert, a man in constant motion, died in his sleep in March 2014 at age 62. There wasn't time to grieve or even process the death of her larger-than-life father, Nyant said, because the nursery had so many plants that had been ordered and needed to be shipped. So overnight, she started working full-time at the nursery to fulfill orders. Her brother joined her soon after to help keep the business alive because their mother wasn't well enough to do the work herself. They had to close their satellite store in Escondido. It was just too much to manage from afar, but the nursery is still open every Saturday for retail sales in Santa Margarita between October and May. Online sales continue year-round, fulfilling native plant orders from as far away as Washington and Utah. More than half, however, come from gardeners in Southern California, Nyant said, especially from Angelinos, seduced by the nursery's many native cultivars and selections and her father's funny, useful, and precedent-setting website. It wasn't just the plants that made the nursery special, although Bert did nurture many landscape-worthy selections he found in the wild, such as the famous Hollywood Flame California fuchsia he discovered growing in the hills of Los Angeles, or hybrids like Baby Bear Manzanilla, Nyant's favorite, that just started growing out of the ground in one of the old greenhouses, likely a cross-pollination between other manzanitas on site. But the top sellers are a couple of cultivars Bert introduced known as Margarita Bop, an electric blue native penstemon, and Salvia Pozo Blue, a fragrant purple sage that's loved by pollinators, incredibly tough and easy to grow, Nyant said. Many of those introductions are staples at other nurseries today because Bert never patented his finds, Nyant said. He just cared about people using the plants, she said. We were the only ones talking about native plants then, and he was really good at it. We had so much traffic on our website, people started going to their local nurseries asking them to stock these plants. Bert discovered the potential of the World Wide Web in the early 1990s when the internet was very new. He taught himself programming and created a website for Las Palitas so people could order plants online. He became one of the earliest nursery owners to sell plants by mail, Nyant said, but his website was far more than a catalog of what the nursery grew and sold. In his spare hours, when it was too dark to work outside or before breakfast in the morning, Bert poured everything he knew into that website, Nyant said, creating pages for every plant he sold, with photos and often humorous text, and explaining their care in best growing regions. He wrote a book, Nyant said, but instead of publishing it, he discovered the internet and was like, wow, I could just make all this information available to the masses, and it would be a great way to advertise us and promote California native plants. His website inspired many of today's native plant proponents and has become legendary in the California native plant world. Before the California Native Plant Society introduced its comprehensive CalScape native garden planning tool, for instance, Bert created a page on his website that let visitors enter their zip codes to determine what native plant communities were best for their region. He was one of the first to explain the importance of mycorrhizal fungi and provide easy-to-understand explanations for everything from understanding pH levels to the problem of reseeding fire-scarred areas with non-native grasses that ultimately become invasive weeds. He even included in-depth instructions about how to build a garden chair from wooden pallets. He wanted to make things simple for the average person, Nyant said. He encouraged the use of appropriate mulch based on the needs of the plants, but railed against using manure and other soil amendments. Don't treat natives like broccoli, was one of his famous sayings. And drip irrigation, which he maintained could severely shorten the lifespan of native plants. Drip seems as barbaric as throwing young women into volcanoes to make your corn grow, he wrote. A lot of family-owned nurseries have closed in the last few years, mostly because younger family members aren't interested in carrying on the business. especially when they could sell the property for a whole lot more money than they'd likely make selling plants. Nyan said she and her brother understand this very well. "We couldn't do this if we didn't have spouses whose jobs can support us," she said. Bears, raccoons, and other critters frequently uproot their seedlings. Heavy snows have flattened their greenhouses more than once, and they rely heavily on their only full-time employee, Glenn Baker Ballantyne, to help Nyant get plants seeded, propagated, potted, and shipped. But Las Palitas is more than a business to Nyant. It's part home and part family legacy. Her father's work was crucial in making California native plants mainstream and accessible, Nyant said. "He dedicated his life to California native plants, and I feel like he is quickly being forgotten." Not on Nyant's watch. There's a large photo of Bert in the retail section, sitting on one of his wood pallet chairs, along with a few of the cultivars he introduced to the gardening world. By all means, visit the La Palitas website and get your orders in early. But if you have a spare weekend, go there in person. It's a lovely drive through blonde hillsides dotted with sprawling oaks, and there's something wonderful about walking through this still flourishing native plant nursery that two prescient idealists created in the wilderness 47 years ago. Marantos turns next to fire survivor updates. This has been a tough year for lots of reasons, especially for those who lost their homes in the Eaton and Palisades fire. So maybe that's why I'm already hearing lots of holiday buzz. We're all desperate for something to celebrate. Altadena can look forward to a couple of events, the annual Winter Festival and Lighting Ceremony for Christmas Tree Lane on December 6th, and the new Winter Bloom Market and Gathering at Odyssey Charter School on November 29th and 30th, in part to celebrate the work of more than 100 local artists and vendors. I'm mentioning the Winter Bloom Market now because organizers want to provide a few holiday ornaments to Altadenans who lost all their belongings in the Eaton Fire this year. So they'll need plenty of donations. You can help by donating holiday ornaments, stars, menorahs, and canaras that are vintage, meaningful, handcrafted, or uniquely beautiful, according to the website, along with a short note explaining the story behind your donation. Donations can be mailed or dropped off at Prime Pizza in Altadena and Plant Material in Silver Lake and Glassell Park. In other fire restoration news, students and staff from Seven Arrows Elementary in Pacific Palisades, EF Academy in Pasadena, and St. Mark's School in Altadena have started work with the Jane Goodall Institute on a new TREAMS, spelled T-R-E-E-A-M-S, short for Trees Plus Dreams, student-led movement to plant 5,000 trees around fire-destroyed parts of Altadena and Pacific Palisades over the next 5 years, starting in April. The project seeks to transform grief into action by restoring burned landscapes, replanting lost trees, and cultivating resilience, wrote one of the organizers, Shauna Marino. The organizers are looking for more schools interested in participating in the project and at least $200,000 in donations to kickstart the project, which they estimate will require about $2 million over the next 5 years. For more information, visit their website, TREEAMS.org. And now to upcoming events. Ongoing, Westwood Greenway's automatic gates are now open, and visitors can walk through the stream-laced trail planted with native plants between Overland Avenue and Westwood Boulevard in Rancho Park from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Westwood Greenway, one word, .org is the website. Tree People's The Plants of Tovangar Project now lets people hear the names of many California native plants pronounced in the native tongue of the region's indigenous Tongva people as part of an interactive audio tour of Coldwater Canyon Park in Beverly Hills. You can also hear the names and pronunciations online, treepeopleoneword.org. Through October 18th, Bloom Town Flower Company Fall Bulb Sale, an online sale from the Covina-based flower farm, features tulips, anemones, ranunculus, and daffodil bulbs that will grow well in Southern California. The website is bloomtownflowerco.com, the first being one word. On October 1st, the impact of non-native plants on local ecosystems, a talk by landscape architect Shelley Sparks at the Cherry Blossom Garden Club meeting at 10 a.m. in the Sepulveda Garden Center in Encino. Admission is free. Facebook www.horticulturecollege.com. October 2nd through the 4th, the Mount San Antonio College's Horticultural Unit Plant Sale, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 2nd and 3rd, and 9 a.m. to noon on October 4th at the Los Angeles County Arboretum in Arcadia. The sale features a variety of low-water ornamental plants, California native plants, fruit trees, and shrubs, vegetables, and herbs grown by students working on horticulture degrees at Mount SAC. Proceeds will support the college's horticultural programs. Free with $18 admission to the Arboretum, $14 for seniors 62 and older and students with ID, $8 for children ages 3 to 12. Free for members and children 2 and younger, arboretum.org. On October 3rd, Botanical Cocktails, a Garden to Glass Experience, a special cocktail demonstration class led by Whiskey Loves Basil at California Botanic Garden in Claremont from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Learn how to craft three original cocktails using handmade botanical syrups. Participants must be at least age 21 to attend and sample each drink. Register online, $55. $45 members, calbg.org. On October 4th, LA Nature Quest. The adventure begins at Griffith Park, 9 a.m. to noon, at the Griffith Park Visitor Center, launching the citywide project, formerly known as the LA BioBlitz Challenge, for Angelenos to photograph wild plants, animals, insects, and fungi in their neighborhoods through the month of October. The photos will be used by scientists to track the city's biodiversity. The free event is sponsored by the Los Angeles Public Library, LA Sanitation, the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County, Los Angeles Rec and Parks, and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. Registration is required, eventbrite.com. Again, Eventbrite is one word, EVENTBRITE. Also on October 4th, the South Coast Chapter of the California Native Plant Society 2025 Fall Plant Sale, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Madrona Marsh Nature Center in Torrance. Members of CNPS and the Friends of Madrona Marsh can enter at 9 a.m. chapters.cnps.org. Adopt a plant from among 2,000 free houseplants, 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Plant Chica store in Limerick Park, Instagram.com. And finally, also on October 4th, Black Thumb Farms Open Farm Days, 9 a.m. to noon at the farm in Panorama City. This is a hands-on volunteer event, the first Saturday of every month through December, for teens, families, and educators to learn how to prepare the farm for the next growing season. Participation is free, but registration is required, blackthumbfarm.org. Several events on October 5th, the Caneo Cactus and Succulent Society Succulent and Cactus Plant Sale, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Thousand Oaks. The event also includes vendors selling pottery, jewelry, and bromeliads, as well as experts who can provide information about growing and caring for the plants. Admission is free. CanejoCSS.com is the website. From Plot to Plate, Fundraiser and Cooking Demo, 1 p.m. at the Eagle Rockdale Community Garden in Eagle Rock, has a goal of raising $5,000 for the Los Angeles Community Garden Council's mission to support community gardens in Los Angeles. Chef Jocelyn Ramirez, an L.A. native and founder of Todo Verde Seasonings, will demonstrate recipes using fresh, local harvests and true-to-culture plant-based cooking. Tickets start at $25 and $50. L.A. Garden Council, one word, .org. Finally, on October 5th, Pineapple, the Cosmopolitan Bromeliad, a talk by conservationist Sandy Masuo, botanical content specialist at the Huntington, for the South Bay Bromeliad Associates October meeting at 1:30 p.m. at the Palos Verdes Community Library Community Room in Rolling Hills. Admission is free, facebook.com. On October 6th, 13th, 2027, and November 3rd, Mini Nature Reservist Native Plant Propagation Course, a free training course for 30 Ventura County students ages 13 and older to learn how to propagate and care for native plants, 6 to 8 p.m. in Oxnard. The instructor is Carlos Martinez, owner of Public Lands Native Nursery, opening a retail store in Santa Paula this fall. Graduates will receive hands-on learning as well as a selection of native plants and a green workforce certification for resumes. Applications close 11:59 p.m. on October 4th. Miniature.org is the website. On October 17th, 14th, and 21st, a three-part California native garden design led by landscape designer Steve Garisher of Larkspur Garden Design, 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. all 3 days at the Theodore Payne Foundation Nursery in Sun Valley. Participants are expected to also take the Foundation's introductory online Right Plant, Right Place course offered October 8th. Register for the design class online, $396.11 for one person or $471.96 for two people working on the same design. Events.humanitics.com. October 11th and 12th, the California Botanic Gardens Grow Native Nursery Fall Plant Sale, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., both days at the nursery in Claremont. Members can enter between 8 and 10 a.m. on October 11th and get a 10% discount on all plant purchases, calbg.org. A number of events on October 11th, the West L.A. chapter of the California Rare Fruit Growers Annual Plant Sale, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Building in Culver City. The sale includes rhubarb plants that will grow well in Southern California, as well as a variety of unusual and usual fruit trees cultivated by members, wla.crfg.org. Lotus Lands Exceptional Plants Auction, 1 to 4 p.m. in Montecito, featuring hard-to-find specimens through silent and live auctions ranging from accessible $30 treasures to rare, high-value plants, such as a one-of-a-kind cycad hybrid, Encephalartus woodiae XE horridus, according to the website. Other unusual offerings including the corpse flower, Amorphophallus titanum, a rarely seen 1972 begonia Francis Fickworth, and specimens propagated at Lotus Land from plants at the Huntington, L.A. County Arboretum, UC Santa Barbara, and private collectors, such as Master Rosarian Dan Bifano. Reserve tickets online. Prices start at $175, $125 for members, lotusland.org. Otto & Sons Nursery Perennial Companion Planting 101, a free class about flowering perennials that attracts pollinators and beneficial insects from 10 to 11 a.m. at the nursery in Fillmore. No sign-up is required. Otto & Sons Nursery, oneword.com. Oak Gal Ink, a class led by L.A. artist Kim Russo in making ink gals created when wasps lay eggs on an oak branch, 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Theodore Payne Foundation Nursery in Sun Valley. Participants are asked to bring their own mallet, small hammer, or rolling pin for smashing galls in a clean jar, at least 8 ounces, with tight-fitting lid to hold the ink. Wear clothes that can get messy. Register online, $79.22, events.humanitics.com. And finally, on October 11th, L.A. County Arboretum presents The Monstrous Garden, an adults-only Halloween-themed look at botanical monsters during a tour of the gardens from 4 to 7 p.m. The event includes light refreshments and a seasonal adult beverage. Participants must be aged 21 or older. Register online, $45, $40 for members, arboretum.org. On October 12th, the California Botanic Garden Herb Walk, Medicinal Plants of California, 9 to 11 a.m. at the garden in Claremont, led by herbalist William Brone during an interactive garden walk and talk about medicinal and edible plants native to California. The two-hour loop walk covers less than a mile with frequent stops. Register online, $30, $25 members, calbg.org. Also on October 12th, Growing Euphorbias, a talk by horticulturalist Al Kine, owner of Botanic Wonders Nursery in Vista, for the October meeting of the South Coast Cactus and Succulent Society from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in McTaggart Hall at the Fred Hesse Jr. Community Park in Rancho Palos Verdes. Admission is free, southcoastecss.org. And October 14th through the 20th, Birding in the Garden, 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. both days at Taft Gardens near Ojai. Avian biologist Peter Laramendi will discuss the basics of birding and common birds found in the Ojai Valley while walking through the garden. Register online. Each day is a separate event, $35, taftgardens.org. And October 17th through the 18th, things that go bump in the night at the California Botanic Garden in Claremont from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Exhibitors include the Pomona Valley Bird Alliance, Guardians of the Wolves, SoCal Bat Working Group, the Invertebrate Club of Southern California, scientists from the Claremont Colleges, and a night hike guided by the Sierra Club, as well as Creepy Crawly Crafts, the world-famous spider show, a comedy bug presentation, and on October 17th only, a live puppet show by the Bob Baker Marionette Theater. Purchase tickets online, $21, $17 for seniors and students with ID, and $15 for children ages 3 to 12. Tickets for members are $16, $12 for seniors and students with ID, $10 for children ages 3 to 12, calbg.org. And finally, on October 17th through the 19th, the Huntington's 9th International Orchid Show and Sale, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. all 3 days at the Huntington's Brody Botanical Center. The event includes a dozen exhibitors from clubs and organizations around Southern California, as well as more than 20 vendors from California, Washington, Ecuador, Japan, Taiwan, and Thailand. The show is free with $29 to $34 admission to the garden, depending on the day. $24 to $28 for seniors, 65 plus, active military and students with ID, $13 to $15 for ages 4 through 11, free to members and children aged 3 and younger. Note that reservations are required for entry Friday through Sunday. Website is huntington.org. And that's it for events through the 17th of October. We'll continue the extensive list in next week's broadcast, beginning with events on October 18th. This month's Plants newsletter, written by Jeanette Marantos, staff writer at the LA Times, and published on October 1 in the LA Times. For the rest of this week's show, we'll focus on two articles on goings-on in botanical gardens. The first is by Todd Martins, a features columnist in the Los Angeles Times, published on the 16th of September. Jurassic Park in L.A.? Robot dinosaurs will soon invade this botanic garden. The dinosaurs are coming this holiday season. The South Coast Botanic Garden in the Palos Verdes Peninsula will host dinosaurs around the world, bringing 13 lifelike animatronic figures to the green space. Running November 1 to January 31st, the exhibit will feature a broad array of reptiles, ranging from the 6-foot-long Australovenator to the nearly 30-foot-long Tyrannosaurus rex. Guests can see the dinosaurs on two walking trails. One is a short loop designed primarily for young children, which will feature a little more than half the dinosaurs, while the other is a full jaunt around the garden. All the dinosaurs will move, some will roar, and none will bite. On weekends, South Coast will run a separately ticketed 8-passenger tram, dubbed the Pangea Express, that will include a tour of the exhibit with dinosaur and garden facts. The goal, in part, is to highlight the so-called living fossils of the South Coast Botanic Garden. Specifically, we have a Dawn Redwood that we're going to be talking about a bit, says Claire Griswold, the garden's learning and engagement manager. We have a really great collection of ginkgo trees as well, and sago palm cycads. A living fossil is a term for a species that was once known only from its fossil record and was later discovered in living form, apparently preserving the physical features from long-gone ancestors. Dinosaurs Around the World is a touring exhibit from creative experiential firm Imagine Exhibitions. It was developed in conjunction with paleontologist Gregory M. Erickson, currently a member of the faculty of Florida State University. Griswold hopes the exhibit is a way to marry some of the wonder and technology of a theme park with the natural awe of an 87-acre botanical garden. Whether or not you learn something, you still get to have a great experience in nature and do something outside of the ordinary, Griswold says. And what's more fun than dinosaurs, really? The LA area is based with numerous gardens that will host seasonal events this fall and winter. Descanso Gardens in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, for instance, will be bringing back its Hollywood-focused Carved, while the Huntington in San Marino will host its otherworldly-focused Strange Science for a weekend in late October. An article by Todd Martins, who's a features columnist for the LA Times, published on September 16th, Jurassic Park in LA, Robot Dinosaurs Will Soon Invade This Botanic Garden. Our second Botanic Garden focus is an article published in the Financial Times of London on September 16th and written by Andrew Jack, Chasing the Cool Factor, Inside the Bronx Garden Making Waves. As it celebrates its 60th anniversary, Wave Hill on the banks of the Hudson River is shaking things up, one hip-hop concert and rain garden at a time. Just beyond the far northern tip of Manhattan, where the Metro North trains veer sharply west with a bend in the Harlem River, the environment suddenly changes. Close to the sprawling urban tower blocks to the south and the east, a hilltop garden suddenly comes into view. Wave Hill Public Garden and Cultural Center sits on the slopes above the Hudson River, a 28-acre green expanse enveloping two historic buildings at the northwestern extremity of the Bronx. With trees, lawns, and varied and colorful year-round flower beds overlooking the river, it feels almost as remote as when it was a lengthy carriage ride from the city for William Lewis Morris, the lawyer who built the original Wave Hill House in 1843. "It's an amazing bubble," says one visitor on a day trip from central New Jersey with her husband, both charmed by the wilder woodland paths sloping down toward the river. With just over 100,000 visitors a year, Wave Hill is little known beyond gardening aficionados and longstanding local fans. But as it celebrates its 60th anniversary as a public garden, its current management is gearing up to attract a wider audience, taking advantage of its setting, broadening programming, and planning to reimagine itself for a new phase. For a site that is less than 5% of the size of the better-known Piers Central Park and Prospect Park, the estate impresses with its variety, color, and rustic vistas, with their sense of space and calm. More than a dozen small gardens, from herbs to wild and tropical, are laid out between multiple lawns and borders, surrounded by woodlands, including rare trees more than a century old. For the past 2 years, the garden has been managed by Ray Oladapo Johnson, previously a vice president at New York City's High Line, the elevated freight rail track repurposed as an urban garden walk. He follows in the footsteps of Marco Polo Stufano, Wave Hill's influential founding director of horticulture, who retired 24 years ago. Oladapo Johnson's primary driving force is, inevitably, adapting the garden to the pressures of climate change and gently broadening its appeal to new audiences, including the city's younger, less wealthy, and ethnically diverse populations. "We want them to be what New York looks like," he says. "What's our cool factor?" He has so far raised more than $30 million in a campaign to support extensive renovations to eroded paths, build a forest rain garden with specialist plants to better manage water runoff, and develop projects offering new opportunities to engage students and young people with nature. He has already made waves by introducing hip-hop concerts and humorous Instagram videos, and organizing summer camps and ecological internships for local children. All the while, he has built on its tradition of hosting art installations. There is contemporary art inside and out, including, most recently, Sarah Jimenez's Folding Field, bright pink textiles draped between a linden and an oak tree. Wave Hill House has a rich history. It was bought from Morris by William Henry Appleton, Charles Darwin's American publisher, in 1866, and leased variously to Theodore Roosevelt's family and Mark Twain. The financier and conservationist George Walbridge Perkins bought both it and the neighboring Glendore House at the end of the 19th century and hired landscape gardener Albert Millard to bring the estates together and lay out the basis of today's garden. Planting at the time was modest, dominated by trees and lawns with an emphasis on views. But as instigator and founding chair of the Palisades Interstate Parks Commission, Perkins was instrumental in preserving Wave Hill's striking vistas, paving the way for the acquisition of the woods and cliffs on the far western side of the Hudson to prevent their destruction. He even commissioned what may have been New York's earliest green roof in 1909, with lawns covering a large underground recreation building with a billiard room, bowling alley, and a squash court. Today, just as the houses were rebuilt over the decades, the gardens are substantially a modern creation. The general layout retains Millard's winding pathways, as well as a number of now mature trees, including red oak, grand copper beech, and a dawn redwood from the 19th century. But when Wavehill was taken over by the city in 1965 and handed for management to a nonprofit, Stefano, who still lives nearby, established the current layout, drawing inspiration as well as seeds and cuttings from Italy and, above all, England, including Great Dixter in Sussex. He removed rose beds to create what he called the 1693 garden, named for the $16.93 spent on seed packets to create it. He replaced a rock garden with a wild garden and filled a former swimming pool with native plants. Some of his original plantings have since been trimmed back, and Wave Hill's seven gardeners have considerable autonomy to experiment on their own patches, says Oladapo Johnson. The result is a variety and unpredictability of changing colors and textures through the seasons, with undulations in the landscape, trees, and occasional low walls creating self-contained and sometimes surprising spaces from cottage garden to aquatic zones. Kathy Deutsch, director of horticulture, says, "Everything we do is on a shoestring budget. We propagate a lot of our own plants, sow a lot from seed, and use self-sowing annuals." The garden already has switched to electric vehicles and lawnmowers. She is also discussing the conversion of one lawn into a wild meadow, the renovation of glasshouses, and a state-of-the-art composting facility. After all, at 60, why not start planning for a new future? The website is wavehill.org. And this article, written by Andrew Jack, was published on September 16th in the Financial Times of London, "Chasing the Cool Factor, Inside the Bronx Garden, Making Waves." And that wraps up episode 313 of Green and Growing in the Garden, the weekly gardening program designed and produced for the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. Please send your comments at www.larrs.org or email us at one word, laradioreading@gmail.com. Please give us suggestions of gardens or stories to follow, your thoughts on a favorite story you heard, or what you think about the broadcast itself. Gardens are not just plants, soil, and irrigation. They speak to us of the world around us, even as we try to create order and structure. They connect us to our landscape and to the cycles of nature. They teach us patience, stewardship, and fortitude. They offer possibilities of beauty, of persistence, sometimes even of transcendence. And they open our senses to both the heart and the soul, to being alive, to being connected with other gardens, other gardeners, and other times. Whether in a container or in pots on a balcony in the city, in a defined, dedicated garden area, planted around a suburban house or in an urban courtyard, or in spaces surrounded by trees, landscape, and open sky. Gardens are precious indeed, no matter where they are. I'm Hugh Ralston, your host. Thanks for joining us. Until the next time.